Hello and welcome to the Author Artist Podcast here at LifewayStores.com. My name is Matt Tullis, and I am so excited to have Art and Tom Rayner with me, two guys that I really admire. They've written a book called Raising Dead, and now they have a brand new book that's coming out called Simple Life that I think is really going to change people's lives. I'm excited about this new project that you have, Simple Life.
Yeah, we
are
too.
Stores later this year. Tell me a little bit about what compelled you to write this book.
Well, this idea obviously came about from the uncoverings that happened with Simple Church. Really, just seeing if we could apply those same principles to daily life, to people's life. Obviously, when you look around, you just see the complexity of life that people seem to be just immersed in. And so we went and did some research with Lifeway Research, and it came to be that basically there were just cries of help coming out, just saying that we are overwhelmed, we're overworked, we have no time, and we need some help to try to figure out how to simplify our lives.
Yeah, when I don't want to focus too much on Simple Church because they'll get confused with Simple Life.
Okay.
But when Eric Geiger and I wrote Simple Church, it ended up being, I would say, immodestly, I'm sure, a best-selling book in its genre. And one of the things we found out was that the people who read Simple Church, whether pastors or other church leaders or laypersons in the church, they were saying they wished they had something that would take the complexity out of their lives like Simple Church did for the churches. And so that was really the impetus behind it. Art and I typically team up on books that apply to life, family, everyday living, and so this was a natural for the two of us to be together. That's a lot more background that you wanted,
Matt. Oh, that's great.
You don't have any questions left now.
I don't. Just let's talk a little bit more about this frenetic pace of life, and I know that both of you did extensive research to get to Simple Life, and I was wondering if you could unpack that for a moment. What are some of the characteristics of the average overwhelmed person in today's culture?
First of all, a lot of people are going to say, how do we get this information? Is this something that is just our opinion? Is it something that we just happened to think about and we wrote it in a book? And the answer is absolutely not. Once we heard the cry for Simple Life, we then did a very massive study. The study had over 1,000 people, 1,077 people, all facets of life, Christians, non-Christian, those with families, those with not. And if you look at this statistically, it's a very accurate study. I know most of us statistical nerds bore people when we talk about it, but you talk about something at the 95% confidence level, margin of error plus or minus 2.8%, and that's impressive to people who are impressed with that. Male and female, more female in the study, 57% to 43% male, but everywhere across the United States, all economic groups, racial, ethnic groups, this was a broad sweep of America asking the question, is your life something that is meaningful to you today, and if not, why not? So I just want to give a little bit of that background, and Art, you can begin to just throw right in there about the four areas that ended up being our big four.
Yeah, absolutely. As we started to go through the research, we noticed some consistencies among the topics that were causing the people of this nation trouble. One was time, the other was relationships, the other was finance, and final one, what was God. As far as time goes, we had 44% of our population said that if they kept at the same pace of life, that they would have health problems. That's them admitting it. They also said 68% of them said that if they could change their day and how it worked and how it functioned, that they would.
Where does a person start if they're aware that their lives are going out of control? Do you kind of give them a stepping stone into how to get their lives back in control?
That's where the framework for Simple Church became really paradigmatic for Simple Life. Art and I took that same framework, which begins with the statement of clarity. In fact, we urge people through this process to make a statement of what they really wanted out of life.
Art, where did you begin your research?
Well, it wasn't so much where I began my research, just where did I guess you could say, began my inspiration for writing. And Really, to me, there was no better place to start writing about anything in life than where, well, life ends, and that's at a cemetery. And so I went there. It was actually at a Jewish cemetery, and was just walking around looking at the headstones of people who had once lived, who were once in the same position that we are, and you just look around and wonder, if they could speak, what would they say right now? If they could tell us how to live our lives and the things that are important in our lives, what would they tell us? When it really, I guess, hit me the most is when I came upon a headstone that had the name Arthur across it.
Yeah.
That's, of course, my name. And it everything just kind of hit home at that point that, you know what, that Arthur may not be obviously me, but one day it will be. It will read Arthur Rayner. And what I do here on this earth, however momentary it may be, is vital and is important. We need to understand how to best live this life that we've been given.
You know, some of the questions are that came out of this study, I mean, it's just absolutely, on the one hand, it is amazing. On the other hand, it's heartbreaking. Listening to over 1,000 people, 1,077, and hearing their cries, just listen to some of the things that they're talking about, what they're saying in their life right now. You walked through the cemetery and you saw when life was over, but listen to some of the cries that we heard. These are direct quotes. I want to be able to spend more time with my child instead of working all the time and having him go to daycare. I would love just for the kids to get along and quit fighting so we could have some peace in the house. We really need a bigger apartment because we're cramped here. I wish we could manage our time better so we could spend weekends together. I spend too much time taking everyone where they need to be and where they need to be there. I need a job that would satisfy all of my financial needs without taking time away from our family time. We're constantly on the go due to our children's sporting events. I wish we could pay off our debt. It'd take a lot of stress off at home and allow us to spend more time together. We all need to be on the same page spiritually. Our relationship with God is an afterthought in our family. Those are like 10 different sentences representative of literally thousands of sentences of over these 1,000 people that were just crying for the simple life. We essentially broke it down into four major areas, and Art has identified those, but then we took the steps of simple church. And just highlight those, Art.
Sure. The first step is clarity, and that's just clarifying what goals you want to pursue in your life, what priorities you want to chase in your life. The next step is movement, and that's really just getting rid of all of the impediments. The third step is alignment, and that's just structuring your life's activities and priorities so that the process of simple life can be accomplished. And then finally, you have focus, and that's really trying to purify all of your actions so that there's nothing preventing you from simplifying your life.
You mentioned in the book there's a big discrepancy between the desire and the reality, between those who know what is right and the actions that fail to follow what is right, between saying that God is my priority and actually making him priority. How does this manifest, do you think, in the lives of believers that are in our churches?
Gosh, Matt, the believers, again, we had a significant sampling of Christians in here, probably a pretty good overlay of what the American population would be. And there was so much desire. I want to spend more time with God, but I don't. Mm. I want to have a greater prayer life. I want to be more committed to my local church, or in some cases, I'm overcommitted to my local church. It seemed to be one extreme or the other. We heard again and again a desire for a closer walk with God, a desire for the whole family to be on the same page spiritually, but very few were taking the action steps that was necessary to do so. That's actually a part of the movement that we talk about, clarity, movement, alignment, focus. Movement is the process of just beginning to do it.
It's kind of scary for me as a pastor knowing that I might be a part of the problem, which
Matt, I would be kind of scared if you were my pastor, but I understand what you're saying there.
Yeah, yeah. This process, one of the things that you really touch upon, both of you, in this book is the idea of creating a mission statement just for your life. Could you unpack that for us just for a moment?
Well, we asked to create a mission statement because not only does it provide you with something tangible that you can hold on to and that you can always reflect to, but it gives you direction. Throughout this whole process, you're going to need some type of direction, and that direction is going to come from your mission statement. And within the mission statement, we're not asking you to do everything that you want to accomplish in your life. You're picking two or three vital areas in your life that you need to simplify or that would help simplify your life. And so it's going to be a motivating factor to help you achieve those.
You know, Matt, when we first conceived the idea of Simple Life to be a natural follow-up and perhaps a broader follow-up to Simple Church, we did not anticipate that our nation and our world would be going through the greatest economic downturn since the Great Depression. And now this book is coming out probably, of course, you know, economists always have two hands. It's on the one hand and on the other hand, and they guess two different positions so they can be right on either one of the two. But we're probably, this book will probably come out at the very bottom when things are at their worst, right near the bottom, right before a recovery begins. And it is providential because we are hearing people saying, I know I need the Simple Life more than ever. I cannot trust in my 401k. I cannot trust in the value of my home. I cannot trust in the security of my job. I have to trust in God and the simple life that He gives us. So we are excited, not because there's a deep recession, but we are excited because we think that this book is a resource that it's about as timely as anything Art and I have ever written.
You come at it from a unique standpoint because in many ways you're both businessmen and you're both ministers. Pastor, business administrator, CEO, all of these different hats. I was just interested, and I guess I'll start with you, Tom. How can you be a CEO and have a simple life?
You know, sometimes I'm the worst illustration for my own sermons. When I was a pastor, I would give a sermon illustration, and I'd come under conviction because I was not always living that example. So one thing that I have to state very clearly, and I do so throughout the book, I don't always practice what I write nor practice what I preach. But as we went through this book and I heard the cries for simple life, it was convicting to me. Just to give you some practical examples, Matt, this is a bit personal, but I don't mind sharing it. I felt like my wife and I did not have enough time praying together. So as a result of going through this, we're now praying daily. We were praying sporadically. My finances are in decent order, but I thought they could be in better order, so we're downsizing. So there's some things that came out of the research that added to a conviction that God was already giving me that just said I needed to simplify my life more. And another thing I've done is I get about 4 or 5 invitations a week to speak. So, you know, I can't really speak 250 to 300 times a year. Or even more than that. And so I simplified and just had to make some people angry. And
you had to say that.
That big no word. That big no word. And then you got Art. Your life is kind of hectic now, too, wouldn't you say, son?
I would definitely say that. One of my struggles and why I relate so much to that section on time is the seeming lack of time in my life. I have a lot going on with school, with full-time work, with writing, and obviously spending time with my wife. And so a lot of that writing came out of conviction. It came out of me looking at my life, comparing it to those in the research and saying, you know what, we all need to get on board with this. It's not just everybody in the research, it's me as well. And so when I'm writing, I'm plugging myself into the writing as well.
Your generation, could you tell us a little bit about where you think your age group is as far as busyness and simplicity? Are they any better off than we are, the people just above them?
Definitely not in simplicity and busyness. In fact, we've just become more busy, and our world has become more complex. We have vast amounts of technology that is supposedly out there to make our lives more simple, but all that it has done is just made it more complex. And we're a generation that has grown up watching watching parents busy themselves, and in order to take care of us, they have busied us as well. And it's the same thing with the generation that will follow me. We're teaching our kids how to be busy, and teaching our kids that if there's nothing in front of them, if they're not doing anything, then they're wasting time.
Right.
And so are things getting better? Absolutely not.
It's amazing watching my sons as they give me parental advice, texting me in the same room. There's just this constant frenetic communication going on, even when we're not communicating. And Tom, I wanted to maybe give you an opportunity to talk about the church you had mentioned. You grew up in a church, and your parents were involved in a church that had quite a bit of conflict. Do you think that conflict is one of those fruits of busyness and lack of simplicity?
Sometimes conflict is a fruit of busyness, and sometimes busyness is a cause of conflict, and they can work both ways. It's a little bit ironic to be president of the largest entity in the Southern Baptist Convention and not grow up Southern Baptist. It gives me a different perspective. I did not become a Southern Baptist until I married Nellie Jo, and I was in a United Methodist church in Union Springs, Alabama. And without giving all the details, all the sordid details, essentially that church went through a split and then another split and another split. And it had a profound impact upon me spiritually, as I am connected to the local church. And what happened was, sometime around the age of 16, right around the time I got my driver's license, I just got tired and fed up with the church, and did not see anything in it that was drew me to be a part of it. So I dropped out and did not reengage in the church until Nellie Jo and I got married. So I have a lot of history that has been applied to some of the research I've done. I've been unchurched, I've been dechurched, I've been rechurched, and I've been through church conflict. So, it had a major impact upon my life, and it did show me that I need to focus on those things that really matter.
How can lay people in the church really support the pastor to try to keep him from flaming out?
Well, number one, they can pray for him. That sounds trite and expected, but when people are praying for the pastor, and I was in a church, Matt, where they committed to pray for me. Over 500 people committed to pray for me, 5 minutes, just 5 minutes a day. And those who were my critics became my supporters when they started praying. And the power of prayer was pervasive in my life. It was my best days of ministry. So if they are serious, they can truly say, I'm going to set aside a few minutes a day to pray for my pastor. Secondly, they can let the pastor do his primary calling. In Acts 6:4, the apostles, when confronted with all demands of ministry, particularly the widows who are not being fed, they said, but we've got to turn our attention to prayer and to the preaching ministry, or the ministry of the word. Not to suggest that a pastor doesn't do pastoral care, ministry, and hospital visits and counseling, but if the lay people keep the pastor so busy with their demands that he be omnipotent, omnicompetent, and omnipresent, If they keep up those kind of demands, he will not be able to do his main calling, which is prayer and the ministry of the word. They got to insist that he has time for both of those and protect his time as well. Two biggies.
We're starting small groups in our church, in homes, and this is definitely going to be one of those books that I think we could use as a small group item, because it is, you have some interactive parts in this book.
We do at the end of every chapter.
And is that another vision that you would see people reading this book together and discussing it?
Yeah, we actually wrote the book with that concept in mind, that this could be something not only for an individual but for a group study as well. And the exercises at the end of that would make it inclined to do so.
I'm just thrilled with this book, and I can't wait to read the rest of it. I've only gotten about 50 pages into the book. It's going to be incredible, and it is available when?
The book releases September 1, And I am not going to do any type of promotion that would seem like I'm pointing to any one entity or showing favoritism. But you can get it at any one of 153 Lifeway Christian stores across the United States or at LifewayStores.com.
Well, thank you there, CEO of Lifeway.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah. But again, thank you so much, Tom and Art, for your contributions.
Well, thank you.